A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch.
The lights are probably gone.
So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 74. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and today we are continuing our discussion of The Invisible Man. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello.
So The Invisible Man was an ITV production that ran for two series in 1958 and 1959, and had a total of 26 episodes that were short 25-minute episodes. And it featured Dr. Peter Brady, who accidentally becomes invisible while experimenting with light and with different things in a laboratory setting.
So, having become the Invisible Man in this accident, Dr. Peter Brady, as a dedicated and talented scientist, is ostensibly working hard to try and find a cure for his condition and to reverse the process and become visible again. But of course, as the series demands, he's not very successful at this. And his efforts are constantly being interrupted by friends and family and damsels in distress, and of course by the British government, who are always asking him to intervene in the latest crisis, where they have a particular task that only an invisible man can solve for them.
Yes, absolutely. And in addition to the government, it seems he's helping just about everyone who needs help. He is helping foreign governments from time to time. He's helping people who are wrongfully convicted of some crime to clear their names. He's helping victims of crimes, all sorts of things.
He's a very helpful fellow, isn't he?
Yes, it seems so.
I mean, we mentioned in the last episode that this is the Invisible Man sort of portrayed as a super spy, but he's effectively a superhero as well. He's just he's available to anybody to help. He's the good guy with the special powers who will literally sort of fly into action if required abroad. He wastes no time in jumping on an aeroplane and rushing to somebody's help, does he, Brian?
Yes, absolutely.
So as well as these other interruptions to his work, there's also various attempts along the way to capture him and to learn his secrets. And we learn that there's various sort of criminal or other countries who are perhaps interested in invisibility and using that evil ends. So there's those interruptions as well. But we should also mention that he's quite a public invisible man. He's a celebrity. He seems to be recognised wherever he goes. Again, to work on our super spy theme, it is a bit like James Bond being the most recognisable secret agent in the world, who everybody seems to know in whichever bar he goes. And so we have an invisible man who, whenever he's wearing his classic bandaged outfit, is instantly recognisable to the general public.
Yes, it seems that way, doesn't it? And this was one of the few elements of continuity in the series, where at the beginning of the series, no one knew about the Invisible Man, and he really was sort of free to creep around and do whatever he wanted. And if people saw him with the bandages, they thought he was just someone who was badly burned or something like that. But they do, partway through the series, unveil him to the public, and he becomes this celebrity where everyone knows who Peter Brady is. Everyone knows the Invisible Man.
That's right. There's an episode called Picnic with Death, where the existence of an invisible man becomes well known to the public, and the press arrive and are taking pictures of him in his bandages. And as you say, from then on, everybody seems to know that it's Dr. Peter Brady. And you see him going through various passport controls and so on at airports, where people instantly say, oh, that's Dr. Brady, the invisible man. So he is completely outed and known to all. And interestingly, the episode Picnic with Death was intended to be broadcast slightly earlier in the series, but due to a slight scheduling error, there's a couple of episodes before it where it slightly contradicts itself, because there are a couple of episodes where it's obvious that people do know about the Invisible Man, and Ralph Smart had intended those to come after the episode Picnic with Death. But as often happens with these things, the scheduling is slightly messed up. So some of it doesn't make strict continuity sense.
Yes, every ITV series gets shown out of order, right?
That seems to be the case, yes. Every series we've discussed from them on the British Invaders tends to get shown in strange orders, and particularly in different parts of the world.
Now, there were a few episodes that were kind of interesting. One that I particularly enjoyed was called The White Rabbit, which involved the discovery of a rabbit that had been turned invisible and then turned visible again. And as the investigation proceeds, this rabbit, which was in France, Brady goes to France, and they discover this sort of fascist group in France that's working to build an army of invisible men, and they have to defeat this group and this project. So that was reasonably clever and sort of a fun little episode.
Yep, that was a good one. We also like the episode Blind Justice, which is in a way a detective episode and features the sort of like neat little concept in the middle that a blind woman is the witness to a crime. And in order to catch the criminal, they must convince the criminal that in actual fact the blind woman can see. And so to do this, of course, they can rely upon the special talents of the invisible man, who can help her drive a car and help her walk across the street and so on. And that's quite a clever little trick using the invisible man's particular sort of skills.
It was cleverly put together sequence. That was kind of neat. There was a quite unusual episode near the end of the series called Shadow Bomb that dealt with a bomb that would go off in a change of light. This was being developed for minefields of a certain type the military were doing. And because it was light-related, Peter Brady being an expert on how light works and these sort of optics kinds of things, he was working on part of it to do this light sensing. And of course, things go wrong, and this unusual situation is set up where someone has to be rescued before this bomb goes off. And the only person who can do that is someone who casts no shadow.
So who are you going to call in a situation like that, Brian?
Well, of course, it's Peter Brady, the Invisible Man.
And you noticed, I mean, it's a good episode. It's one of the Brian Clemens episodes. And you noticed a similarity in the sort of structure of the plot to another series that we'd discussed on British Invaders.
Absolutely. It is reminiscent of the Thunderbirds.
It does have that feel to it, doesn't it? It feels like a Thunderbirds episode, except with the Invisible Man rushing to the scene of the accident instead of Thunderbird 1.
Yes, the structure of the story was similar. Of course, it came several years before Thunderbirds did. But nonetheless, it was interesting to see that. It was a fun episode.
It was fun. And if you're familiar with the producer Ralph Smart's other series from the 1950s, you'll recognise some of the actors in that episode, because it has the chap who would go on to play William Tell, and also the actress who played Maid Marian in The Adventures of Robin Hood. So it's a good fun episode, and there's lots to see in there. I think it also, Brian, has the colonel who was in one of the Quatermass shows. I think it's Colonel Breen was in Quatermass and the Pit, is also in that.
Ah, yes. I think you're right. I think that may have been him.
Yes, again, playing another military officer. You also, I think, mentioned an episode called The Prize, which was quite interesting. And the Invisible Man has to go to an unnamed Scandinavian country to receive a prize for his scientific work, and then gets involved in a mission to rescue another prize winner, who is trapped behind the Iron Curtain, in effect. Is trapped in an Eastern Bloc country who are unwilling to release her. And that was quite fun as well, Brian.
Yes, it was. That one was a little more typical of what they did on this show. But it was fairly well done. It was kind of neat where they dealt with the Invisible Man using various gadgetry to cross a minefield, and then, you know, setting up all of these odd situations to allow this person to cross through the Iron Curtain, so to speak, and then to do so himself as well.
So we've got these spy episodes and detective episodes, and as always, the Invisible Man coming to the help of those who need him and those in need. Some fun, although some of the plots do get recycled quite a few times.
Oh, most definitely.
This detonator of Brady's is basically a light cell, isn't it? That's correct.
And we place it on the top of the general's mind.
Yes, well, it's really an electric eye, which is sensitive to the changes in light intensity. The cell is linked to the detonator here, and as soon as there's a change in light, the cell reacts to it.
Mm-hmm. It seems to be just what the general ordered. So all you need is a shadow across
they
the air.
Did have quite an interesting variety of supporting cast over the course of 26 episodes. They had lots of British actors who, while maybe not well known then, would over the years become quite well known for various roles. So it's interesting to look at this and see all of the people who show up in it.
That's right. If you watch The Invisible Man, you will recognize countless faces from British TV over the years. We've picked out some that caught our eye. I noticed Dennis Price in an episode called Behind the Mask. And Dennis Price, most famous for the film Kind Hearts and Coronets.
Oh, yes.
That's right, yes, with Alec Guinness. There's an actress called Adrienne Corry who would go on to be in the film Clockwork Orange. And then a very recognisable actor from the 1960s and 1970s on British TV, Darren Nesbitt, who we discussed briefly when we talked about The Prisoner, and he was also in UFO. And more recently, he's been working with Big Finish on some of their Doctor Who dramas. So he's quite easy to spot. And then if you're a fan of British Hammer horror movies, you may recognise a very familiar character actor called Michael Ripper, who's in a couple of episodes of The Invisible Man, and who was probably in every Hammer horror film ever made. If you've seen a Hammer horror film, you've probably seen Michael Ripper.
You also had Patrick Troughton in it, who was, of course, the Second Doctor and played in all kinds of series. Honor Blackman, who was the original female lead in The Avengers and went on to play Pussy Galore in the Bond film Goldfinger. And speaking of Bond films, Desmond Llewellyn, who played Q in many Bond films, shows up as a police officer in The Invisible Man as well. And Peter Salas, who briefly showed up in Doctor Who in the 60s in The Ice Warriors and went on to be the voice of Wallace in Wallace and Gromit, he shows up in there too.
Absolutely, yes. He was another familiar actor. We've also got Leslie Phillips, who would perhaps go on to be better known as a comic actor in a number of British films, including most recently Love Actually. But he's also, he plays quite a dark, sinister criminal role in The Invisible Man, which, you know, quite unusual for the comic roles he would go on to. And then another Bond connection, we've got Charles Grey, who would play Blofeld in the Diamonds Are Forever Bond movie. I also spotted very briefly, I think in the same episode with Charles Grey, the actor who played the controller in the control room on the island in the village in The Prisoner.
That's right, of course.
Yes. I can't remember the actor's name, but he's a very distinctive-looking, bald-headed actor who crops up briefly here. And then finally, another Hammer horror connection for me is the actress Barbara Shelley, who turns up in the very last episode of The Invisible Man, and again, who was very famous as a sort of scream queen in Hammer horror films from the 1960s.
And you also had not one, but two actors who played Professor Bernard Quatermass showing up in the same episode, André Morel and Andra Keir. André Morel from the original BBC version of Quatermass in the Pit, and Andrew Keir from the Hammer horror version of Quatermass in the Pit. So you really did have all kinds of people showing up in The Invisible Man throughout its run. And if you do watch the whole series, that is one of the most interesting things, and that's really worth looking for, is all of these people who show up.
Absolutely. It's entirely charming, really, in a way, to see these actors, most of them before they became sort of household names. So, you know, a lot of them very young in small parts, and just to see them quickly appearing, it's quite entertaining.
Absolutely.
So I guess as I'm talking about charming elements of The Invisible Man, that should bring us on to our discussion of the good and the bad of this series that we've been talking about. So Brian, let's start with the good. What were the interesting elements you found here?
Well, it's certainly an interesting slice of sort of typical late 50s adventure TV, and it's nice to sort of see that. But also in particular, I enjoyed a lot of the effects. They were done in sort of simple ways with simple tools, but many of them were done pretty well. Sometimes the wires and strings and things were visible, but they weren't too bad when they were, and often you couldn't see the wires and strings. So the effects of having an invisible man there, they were kind of neat and entertaining to see what they would do.
They are fun, actually. I mean, as you say, some of them slightly let down by the visibility of the wires and so on. But there's other special effects where actually I was watching, I was thinking, well, how did they do that? And I still couldn't work it out. And it's quite advanced, really, I guess, for the 1950s. And the ITV network had only been up for about 3 years at this point. So they were pulling out all the stops on some of the special effects for the time.
Yeah, this was definitely very early for ITV, wasn't it? And I think in many ways they were still trying to be sort of reactionary to the BBC, that they were trying to do something different that would stand up, and this is the type of thing they would do, I guess.
The car driving is quite fun, although they perhaps they use the sequences of him driving his distinctive sports car a bit too often. So we see far too much of the bandaged invisible man in the car, but also of the invisible man without his bandages driving the car. Although the first few times you see it, it is great fun.
Yes. They also made a habit of sort of trying out something new in almost every episode, and that was kind of neat.
It's, they're quite quick. They're 25 minutes. They wrap everything up in 25 minutes. Certainly the individual episodes do not have a pacing problem at all, do they, Brian? They certainly get on with it.
That's right. They are quite quick.
And it's got, I mean, I felt it had that sort of Saturday morning television serial feel to it. There's quick episodes. There's not much in the way of continuity to keep up with. The effects are quite fun. There's usually a fight, and then there's usually a happy ending, all within 25 minutes. Perfect, really, from that point of view.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, quick, quite simple little stories. Well, I think we've pretty well mined most of the positives there. What do you think was negative or lacking in this, Eamon?
Well, unfortunately, it's quite a lot of that as well, isn't there, Brian?
Well, yes.
I suppose we should mention the problem that we've encountered several times before on British Invaders when we're looking back on these shows from several years afterwards, which is the sort of some of the racial stereotyping that was used in The Invisible Man. And of course, we have to remember that this was, you know, the 1950s, and perception was not the same as we have now. He does seem to get involved in quite a lot of fictional Middle Eastern countries, where they are often portrayed as the bad guys.
Yes, those were kind of odd. Some of them were okay stories, but the context and how they set them up, they were a little strange, weren't they?
They were, yes. And of course, unfortunately, what it means is, because this was all mostly shot in the studios with little bits and pieces of stock footage, that we have British actors using a lot of brown makeup and some rather dodgy accents to play the people that Peter Brady will meet in these fictional Middle Eastern countries. And of course, to our eyes now, that does look rather unfortunate.
Yes, it does. And some of those, not only is it now a little lacking in taste, but also some of them just were a little awkward and didn't work that well. You know, that portrayal, even if you accept it, just didn't work very well.
No, that's right. It does cause problems. And as we said, it's a problem of the time period. We've encountered it before. It just does jar with us slightly when we see it now.
Yeah. I have to admit, I am not a big fan of the writing in this series. There were a lot of sort of reused ideas and plots, a lot of sort of very simple things that seemed thrown together and were not terribly interesting. We mentioned a few episodes that were a little more interesting, but there were a lot that were really quite basic and could have been better.
Yes, absolutely. They recycle quite dramatically. So several of the episodes seem to be more or less clones of earlier episodes, with just another setup to involve the Invisible Man having to get into a room without people knowing he's there. And again, it goes along with that sort of no continuity. These were just sort of standalone episodes. You could watch one and then probably not have to come back next week. But the writing is a bit dodgy in places. And there's only one or two of the episodes where they actually try to do something interesting with the concept of an invisible man. like the episode The Shadow Bomb that we mentioned. But apart from that...
And to a certain extent, maybe White Rabbit, where they're dealing with the potential army of invisible men. This is, in many ways, I think, sort of typical 1950s adventure programming. This is the third 1950s show we've talked about now. And when we talked about Quatermass and when we talked about 1984, these were remarkable shows that were ahead of their time and did some impressive stuff and really stand up. Well, I can't say the same thing about The Invisible Man.
No, I think that's right. This is probably more typical of the era. If you've ever seen The Adventures of Robin Hood or William Tell, you'll know the same sort of idea, which was that they were standalone episodes. The reset button was pushed at the end of each episode, and they were just 25 minutes of adventure with, with a fight, a punch up, and a happy ending. And that's pretty much what we got.
That's about right. I should mention just the quick little comparison of this version of The Invisible Man and The Invisible Man that we saw in the original H.G. Wells novel. In the novel, the Invisible Man himself was invisible, but nothing else was. So he had to be completely naked to be able to go around and be invisible. Where for Peter Brady in the TV series, when he turned invisible, his lab clothes turned invisible as well. So he had a set of invisible clothing that he could go and put on. And this became a repeated theme that, you know, he would go and get his invisible clothing. It seemed like at that stage, even the idea of the invisible man walking around naked, even though no one could see him, even that wasn't acceptable.
No, it's a neat idea by the writers. They have to give him some invisible clothes, as you say, because we couldn't have the invisible man walking around naked. It would just be too awkward. But I guess if you've got an invisible suit of clothes, you have to be very careful where you keep those, Brian.
Yes, that's true.
Be very careful about hanging them up in the same place.
Absolutely. They also sort of changed the nature of the character himself, because the original Invisible Man was sort of a power-hungry thug. He decided to make himself invisible in order to take advantage of people and to get his own way and get lots of power doing this. And Peter Brady, of course, was a fine upstanding gentleman who accidentally became invisible and used that to help his country and help people who are in need. So there was a pretty big contrast there.
That's right, yes. We've just got the classic representation of the look of the bandages and the black glasses and the hat and gloves.
Yes, and some of the ideas about using light and refraction and those kinds of things to achieve the invisibility, some of those were definitely taken from the book.
There's also a couple of quick references that I wanted to mention. We mentioned there was some stock footage used, and in the very first episode, Secret Experiment, if you watch closely and if you're familiar with Quatermass, you may recognize some stock footage which was taken from the Hammer movie version of Quatermass 2, and that's been inserted into The Invisible Man here, and that stood out for me as I'd recently watched the Hammer version.
So Brian Don Levy was just around the corner?
Probably he was just around the corner, yes. And we see a sequence of some soldiers running through a factory for some sort of alarm, and that's taken from Quatermass. And the other thing which is interesting is, if you're at all familiar with Alan Moore's comic book, The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, you'll know that that uses a version of the original H.G. Wells' Invisible Man. And you'll probably also know that Alan Moore has done a more updated version recently, where he's brought the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen into the 20th century. And it does contain a reference to a second invisible man who is called Peter Brady, although it mentions that he wasn't terribly successful as an invisible spy because he was smoking all the time.
Yes, well, he certainly was smoking all the time, wasn't he? Yeah, the book did deal with the idea of what happens when the invisible man eats and drinks, and there was sort of a sequence where someone can see a little bit of food, barely just an image of it hanging around because it hadn't quite been absorbed into his body, where that doesn't seem to be an issue with Peter Brady. It's never been mentioned, and it seems like as soon as something goes into his body that it's invisible, although they don't use that to have him carry objects in his mouth or anything like that.
Looks like an ordinary white rabbit to me. Now, what would you say if I told you that it had been invisible?
Invisible?
Could you tell me if this animal or any other had been made invisible?
Well, there are certain tests. Anything which had undergone the process of becoming invisible might still have traces of radioactivity.
So, as ever, if we've piqued your interest, we should let you know how you can, in fact, see the Invisible Man yourself.
Well, the Invisible Man was actually sold to CBS in the U.S. and other countries. So if this sounds familiar, you may actually have seen it on television or in reruns somewhere, because it has hung around for quite a while.
Yes, I think it probably was quite successful for ITV because they could sell it, and it was rerun for several years, apparently right up until 1966. And then for some reason, they started reshowing it again in 1989. So, you know, lots of reruns around the world, probably reasonably financially successful for them, I'd have thought, Brian.
Yeah, those reruns and those sales are probably the reason that we still have it, that it wasn't lost, because it was something that they were actively selling for a rebroadcast in other countries.
And so they collected all the 26 episodes for us in a Region 2 DVD release from the company Network TV, and that came out in 2007. That also includes the unaired pilot and also a couple of commentary tracks on the Region 2 version. And on Amazon currently, that's going for about £20, but it's also available on the Love Film rental site, so you can get it there.
There is also a Region 1 DVD release that has those 26 episodes, but it's a little bit more stripped down. I don't think it has the original unaired pilot, and I don't think it has the commentary tracks either. I don't remember seeing them there at any rate. It sells on Amazon.com for about $38, something similar in Canada, and it's available on Netflix.
But if that seems like too much of an outlay for the 26 episodes, we have found that there is one, at least one episode is available for free download. And that's on a site that we've mentioned before, an internet classic TV archive at www.archive.org. And we will put the link to the episode in question up on the Facebook page. That episode is Blind Justice, the one we mentioned earlier on, which is the ninth episode of this first series, and does in fact feature Honor Blackman as the blind woman in question.
Yes, that's right. So we should talk about our recommendation. So, Eamon, what did you think about The Invisible Man, and what would you recommend?
I was hoping you weren't going to come to me first, Brian.
Of course I'm going to come to you first.
It's a tricky one, isn't it? I mean, there are moments that are very charming, and it's great to see some of these British actors before they were famous, before they would go on to do things like Doctor Who, where we're much more happy with them. On the whole, it's not a great series. It's got a lot of problems with it. We didn't mention the acting, because some of the performances of the leads are really not very good. Perhaps only Deborah Watlin, who was, as you say, 10 years old at the time, she's perhaps the only impressive one who seems completely at ease with the concept of an invisible man. I don't know. I think there's lots of other stuff that I would go to before you got to The Invisible Man. I think perhaps my recommendation would be, if you're interested at all, go for the one episode you can download, see the sort of stuff we've been talking about, and then perhaps check it out on rental afterwards if you're still interested.
I think that is a pretty reasonable recommendation. I agree, on the whole, it's not a great series. If you want to check out some classic 50s adventure TV, if that's the kind of thing you like, or if you're interested in seeing what that is like, this is not a bad choice. And there are a few episodes here and there that are interesting. But on the whole, I can't give it a big recommendation. If you're curious, maybe check out an episode or two. But I think that's about as far as we can go, although it is kind of interesting to see what they did.
Yeah, it's another one of our quirky, eccentric series that we sometimes talk about here on British Invaders.
Absolutely. So, in summary, The Invisible Man was a late 50s TV series that was based on the H.G. Wells idea of a scientist turning himself invisible. In this case, it's Peter Brady turning himself invisible accidentally and going on to be an invisible super spy and good Samaritan and someone who helps out his country and all sorts of people by doing things that only someone invisible could do.
There you go. we recommend downloading the free episode and letting us know what you think.
Or check out a disc on rental and let us know what you think.
So join us next time. We're going to be jumping forward to 1991. We're going back to the early works of Russell T. Davies, who was the showrunner for the successful relaunch of Doctor Who. And we're going to be talking about his series called Dark Season. Some interesting stuff there, Brian.
Yes, that will be an interesting one to talk about.
And some more British actors when they were young and before they were famous.
Absolutely. And you'll hear more about that when we come back and talk about it. So, you can reach us at BritishInvaders@gmail.com, and you can find us at www.BritishInvaders.com. We have a Facebook group, so if you go to Facebook and search for British Invaders, you will find us there. So, thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada, signing off.
Yes, thank you very much for being with us. We hope you'll come back next time for Dark Season, and until then, this is Eamon from England saying goodbye.